Welcome to Tech Talk from RNIB Connect Radio, the RNIB's technology show for blind and partially sighted people. See technology differently.
Hello, welcome along to another Tech Talk here on RNIB Connect Radio and on podcast as well. It is lovely to be with you. Robin Christofferson's back with me once again from AbilityNet. Do you want to tell the good folks out there your title, Robin, so that they know how important you are?
I'm Head of Digital Inclusion, MBE.
And Yes. Sorry, I'll get down on my knees. Oh, here we go. Bow to the Lord. Andy Wynn is here. I nearly called you Andrew. I do this every time. Oh, yeah. Your Sunday name.
Yeah, that used to call me that when I'm in trouble.
Well, in fairness, we are in the presence of a Lord.
Oh, yes. Sir Andrew, yeah.
Sir no, Robin. Not you, him.
Oh, right.
No, you're not knighted.
Not yet.
Moving on.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, we've got lots to talk about in the show this week, as we always do. How many emails do we have, Andy? We must have millions of emails.
Tons, pages and pages and pages.
But we like them. Do you know what I do? I love it. It's my favourite bit of the week, collating all the emails. Now, I just want to say, we don't get to every email you might send an email in and it's a couple of weeks before we get to it. Sometimes you might send an email in and we don't get to it right away, especially if you've asked a question. We'll often send it off for our Ask Tech Talk feature. If you've asked a question that maybe we don't know the answer to, we will send that question off anonymously to our Technology for Life team here at RNIB. So don't worry if you're sending in a question. We're not sending off your email address and your name or any of that. Not doing that. Just sending off your question and awaiting a response as well. So hopefully we'll get more of those in. But if you do have a question, you can email us techtalk@rnib.org.uk and, of course, on Twitter as well, Andy.
Yeah, use the hashtag AskTechTalk and then we can send them straight over to the TFL team.
Unless we know the answers, because we know stuff as well.
Yeah, we do. Yeah, some
sometimes.
Stuff.
Sometimes, yeah. so we're going to get to your emails a bit later. There are lots of those. David Woodbridge from Vision Australia, Robin, regularly does lots of reviews on his podcast. And this week he's talking about flying drones.
Yeah, I mean, as a blind person, I would be quite hesitant before whizzing one of those either indoors or outdoors, either for fear of massive damage to or loss of life indoors or massive loss of drone outdoors. So,
yes,
but we have the answer.
Yeah, so this is incredible. He's going to be flying a drone. I don't know if he does it in the demo, does he? Does he fly the drone in the demo?
Yep, and it sounds like a jet engine, but it's tiny.
Oh, it sounds
but it's
amazing.
Impressive.
I kind of love the idea of this, but I would be terrified. I think it's good as well. You can get ones that follow you, from my understanding. You can get them that follow you via GPS or however it is, maybe that uses the phone or something, and it can follow you around.
You have to be careful of branches and things if you're going to be going outside. But the thing I really love about this one is that you can program it. You can make it exactly do what you want so that if your room is 5 meters by 10 or whatever it is, it won't hit anything and it'll land exactly where it left off on your coffee table or something. And similarly outdoors, obviously taking into account wind and that sort of thing. But it's really good.
Okay. Well, we're going to get to that. But first, we are going to talk about RNIB's reading services website. Now, Robin, you know as well as I do that we've been waiting a long time for this to emerge. And on February 10th, it finally happened. The Talking Books service released the Reading Services Library website. Now, coming up, you're going to demonstrate some of that website for us and download a book so we can see how easy it is to do. You're using, JAWS for that?
JAWS and Chrome on Windows, but it does mention, and I think Alison does as well, about other platforms too.
Well, you mentioned Alison. She's with us now, and she's welcomed back to the show. Alison Long from RNIB here to tell us more about the changes and the updates here. Good to have you back on Tech Talk, Alison.
Hello. Thank you for inviting me back.
Oh, you're always welcome, Alison. You know that. And everyone loves to hear from you because it's good to find out what's going on with RNIB Talking Books. The new reading services website is now live, I believe.
It is. I have to say it's been a bit of a painful birth, as they say, but we're there now, delivered. I mean, it is kind of soft launch. We don't quite have Easy Reader yet. So, you know, we're saying we're getting in touch with Overdrive customers over, you know, the next couple of weeks to say it's live. Here's how you register. Here's a bit of information about it. You know, read your books up on Overdrive, because we will be closing it at the end of March. Easy Reader is imminent. We know customers will be waiting for it. So that's in beta test at the moment.
Yeah, because there's been a bit of controversy online about it, people saying on various forums, you know, yeah, there's no Easy Reader yet. And I think there has been some concern about the closure of the Overdrive system, despite many people's criticism of it. They're thinking, hang on, we don't want to be left with nothing. So there is going to be an overlap.
Yeah, definitely overlap, definitely not leaving people with nothing. And really, this is, you know, a heads up, things are changing. And really, at the moment, you know, we know that, you know, we've got quite a lot of active customers on Overdrive, because thankfully, you know, Dolphin did the work to integrate Easy Reader. That has grown. So we're saying, you know, read your books up. You know, by the time, you know, you've done that, we'll be ready with the app integration, which will, you know, make it easy.
Okay, so for those who aren't maybe as teched up as we are on all this, what does this mean? So if you are currently receiving or downloading your audiobooks through RNIB Overdrive, maybe you're using the website on your computer, what do you just go to a different website? You log in the same way?
Yeah, it's a different website, and, you know, it is like any other. You know, I mean, the feedback from customers who've tested it for us is, you know, easy to use, simplified, you know, both in terms of the website and, you know, the kind of functionality of searching and downloading books. So, you know, regular kind of website experience, and, you know, more books on there and growing. So we you know, we managed to persuade publishers who didn't let us host their books on Overdrive to allow us to do it on the new platform. That's gone really well. We haven't had a no yet, and we've got one or two of the smaller publishers just to mop up. So you know, you'll see the kind of HarperCollins and the Audible and other books that you couldn't get on Overdrive coming through. And you know, it's full Daisy audio, so you know, you get the navigation if you're using a Daisy player or app, and you know, the quality is so much better. I think that's been a really standout feedback from customers. We know that the compression rate, if we want to get technical, you know, has been pretty low with the Overdrive books, so much better quality read.
I'm seeing a lot of tweets online praising that, saying the audio quality is so much better. Audio is our pictures, right, as blind people. So, you know, it's got to be good. And, a lot of people being very praiseworthy of that. And that's good. That is great to hear, because that was one of my hates of Overdrive in some ways, was the sound of the audio.
Yeah, some of them sounded like you were in the toilet, didn't
they? Were terrible. Yeah, and it was just the compression on them. The actual story obviously was recorded perfectly.
Yeah, and if you had it on CD or USB, completely different.
It's fine,
quality. So that's a really big win, I think. And also, you know, the fact that you don't have to return the book. So, you know, this is a download, you know, read it at your leisure. It's, you know, because we know that some customers, you know, they just dip in and out now and again. So the 3 week, you know, kind of disappearance out of your book list was a bit annoying. You'd have to go find it again and download it. So so there's some little things like that in there that are a nice bonus too.
You mentioned it was a difficult birth, and that's fair enough. I mean, these things often are. I mean, it's a difficult thing to relaunch a whole new service in this way, or relaunch a service in this way. What about other services? And you know, I'm going to ask you about this, the Victor Reader and all that. I know we were talking about Humanware Victor Reader. Is that looking
Yeah, they came over in January. Our technical guys talked to their technical guys, and so that's definitely happening. Brilliant. I told them I'd been on the radio and told customers it was, so it had to. but yeah, they're doing it anyway. They're committed to it. So HumanWear will roll it out across all of their product lines. But I have said, please, you know, the stream first would be great.
Absolutely.
I'll catch up with them next month. But you know, hopefully hear something in the meantime. And we're also talking to one or two other app developers that, you know, about integration. You know, it's very easy to do, you know, and we know that customers want choice. So, you know, we will see that coming through over coming months.
Now, interestingly, one of the other benefits of this new reading service is it's not just text on there, it's, or audio actually, it is Braille as well. So you can get e-Braille through this, which of course is great news for any of our Orbit Reader fans out there. Bit of a limited library to start with, is that right?
That's right. So we've got a couple of hundred titles up at the moment. That's increasing day by day. We've got this thing that we call the devolumizer that we're pushing the titles through. So our beautifully formatted files are being kind of stripped down so that they're easier to read using a refreshable Braille display or note taker.
Okay, and you also want to talk to us about new books as well. This is the CD, is it, that goes out to people?
Well, new books we send out in a range of formats, so Braille, large print, audio CD, USB, and you know, we've been sending out for years. There was a long period where we automatically signed new library members up to new books. Bizarrely, even if they had the preference service and they didn't really select their books themselves. So we've kind of now got this enormous, about 40,000 customers who receive new books. And so we're just asking people to resubscribe so that we can, you know, send it out to customers who want it, absolutely, in the format of their choice.
Yeah, I'm saying CD because that's what I get in the post. So I'm being a bit selfish on that one. But yeah, you're right. It comes in other formats and it does detail exactly that, the new books that are in the library.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty, you know, it's very functional. Quite like to start adding a little bit more information about service, you know, developments into it as we move along. But, you know, at the moment, it's really about, you know, getting people resubscribed if they wanted in the format that they wanted in. But we have only put that in new books itself. So, you know, we do appreciate that, you know, some customers may miss it if they, you know, decide to skip an edition and then they'll wonder where their new books are. So looking at other ways to kind of communicate with customers that, you know, they need to let us know. There is a web form online that people can just do it online, or there's, you know, there's a helpline and answer phone on there as well.
Okay, so if anyone's got any queries, and I'm sure someone will be listening to this having maybe an issue or a query or just a general question about the new RNIB Reading Services website, how to find it, all that.
Yeah.
Is there a quick link they can go to on a website?
There is. Yeah, I mean, we'll do big bang marketing kind of in a couple of months, but, you know, happy for people to sign up and have a dabble. So it's readingservices.rnib.org.uk. And then if they want some, you know, if they've got questions or want support, then the mailbox is readingservices@rnib.org.uk.
Okay, brilliant. And if anyone wants any more information or just to talk to someone about this because they're a bit confused by it or just need a question answered, who should they contact?
Well, if they can contact the helpline, you know, that's fine, or they can email the reading services mailbox direct.
Brilliant. Alison Long, thank you so much once again for joining us here on RNIB Connect Radio.
You're very welcome. Thank you.
And that helpline number is 0303 123 9999 if you would like to get in touch with the helpline and ask any questions about the new reading service. Now, Robin has been demoing this service for us this week just to give us an idea of what it's like to go onto the website and download a book. Robin.
Here we are at the new RNIB Reading Services website. The really good news here is that it's a lot easier to use than Overdrive, and it has more titles. I don't know why, but more titles have appeared, which is really, really good news. So the address is readingservices.rnib.org.uk, and once you have registered and logged in, then you'll be on the homepage. Let's hit H.
Heading level 1, welcome to RNIB Reading Services.
And let's start arrowing down.
Access our ever-expanding world of books. Just the touch of a button will open up a whole world of reading at your fingertips.
I should say that I'm using JAWS with Chrome on Windows here. Now, on this page is a lot of information about getting started. There is an FAQ. It makes it really easy to know what to do. Just to start searching for a book is as simple as pressing E to get to the search box.
Wrapping to top, title, author, or ISBN edit.
If I hit enter.
Search region.
Now, I have been listening to a series of books by M.C. Beaton about a detective called Agatha Raisin, and up to book number 25, which didn't used to exist, and now it does in this library, and it's called Blood of an Englishman. I'll start typing that. Enter.
Home-reading-services-google-chrome.
Now we're on the search results page.
Alert.
Now I could have...
Searching title catalog dot dot dot.
I could have searched for the author or for the ISBN number as well as the book title. Let's hit T to go to the table.
Six columns and four rows.
And column start one, arrowing down.
One, title. Agatha Raisin and the Blood of an Englishman left paren. Agatha Raisin number 25 right paren.
I'll just stop it there. Now if we hit tab from here.
Title details complimentary region. Add to read later list.
We can save this for later.
Complimentary region. Download. Download title.
Or we can download by hitting enter here. Now, in the instructions, it says that after hitting enter, it doesn't actually start downloading the book. It starts preparing it for download. And if you wait a few minutes and hit download again, then it will actually start downloading the book. Or you can go to the pending section of the website, and the pending downloads will be listed there. And on that page, it will tell you if it's ready for download. So what do you get when you've downloaded your book? Well, you get a .zip file in your download folder. And if you enter on that to open it up, then you see a single folder in there. And in that folder are lots and lots of files. Don't worry about those. Just highlight the folder and copy it to where you want to on your hard drive. Now, on the website, it recommends a talking Daisy Book Player called Speak On Suite. And we'll have a look at that now.
Speak On Media Suite gained focus.
Here we are in the app called Speak On Media Suite. Now, this is a free app. If you go to speakon.org.uk, it's free to download and it's a self-voicing program that will read your audiobooks, but it will do so much more as well. Radio stations, podcasts, music, in the UK, talking newspapers and magazines, etc. Really, really good. But let's see how it works with the audiobook. So I had that folder, I've copied it to the clipboard, and I've pasted it into an audiobooks folder that is created in the users folder for Speak On Media Suite. So you just copy it in there, and then it will appear here. So if I arrow down.
CD 2 on 7. Podcast 3 on 7. Music. 4 on 7.
We can hear some of the things that it can support, but let's go back up to the top.
Audiobooks, 1 on 7.
That's the first item. I'll hit enter.
Audiobooks task player loading last media played. Player, Agatha Raisin and the Blood of an Englishman, section 3. Ready.
There you go. Now I just got past the initial bit with all talking books, which is the ISBN number and the registered charity number and all that sort of thing. So if I start by just hitting enter now.
The Blood of an Englishman by M.C. Beaton. Read by Penelope Keith. Chapter 1.
I'll just stop it there. So there you go, read by Penelope Keith. They all are. They're really good books, by the way, guys. Now you can also use this website on iOS and Android as well. And when you've downloaded it, you can open that zip file in VoiceDream Reader or Dolphin Easy Reader as well. So there you go, guys. Really good new service from the RNIB, available on Windows, Mac, iOS and Android. And now back to the studio.
Okay, Robin, now that is really helpful, I think, for a lot of people, just to sort of figure out the basics, getting in and downloading a book. So overall, for you, a good experience?
Yeah, I really like the new service, particularly the fact that you've got better quality audio and that you've got more titles. So that Agatha Raisin series of books that I'm talking about in the demo, there are more titles there now than before, although it's too late for me because I've bought all the rest on Audible. But just to be aware that there are still gaps. So, you know, it goes up to book 25, but there are missing titles in that series on this new service. So it's obviously a work in progress. I do really like the fact that you don't have to now return books or they don't expire, which Alison mentioned there. So that's really good because, like she says, you know, I mean, I personally have loads of books on the go. And depending on how I'm feeling at any one time, I'll dip in and out of those. So, yeah, that's brilliant. So in the demo, I mention about how VoiceStream Reader and Dolphin Easy Reader on your phone can be used as well. Just be aware that if you have either of those on your phone, then there isn't integration with them yet via the app. So people are used to Overdrive on Easy Reader, for example. You can go to that item, you can log in and you can, you know, download your books, etc. There is a beta version of that, which has the full integration. But until that becomes available, what you'll need to do is go to the website on your phone, download that zip file, and then choose open with, and then pick the app like Dolphin Easy Reader, for example, and it'll open up in it and play in that fine, as far as I understand. So yeah, just to be aware, until such a time, which hopefully won't be very long at all, because the beta's pretty baked by now, that there is integrated access. You'll just have to do it that way via Safari.
Okay. Does sound good. Does sound good. Any other thoughts, comments, concerns?
Just love it. I just can't wait for more titles to come down. I personally wouldn't use my desktop, you know, a full computer to listen to audiobooks, but hopefully some people will find that Speak On Media Suite easy to use. It does so much more, as we touched upon there.
But I think it's more about getting the audio onto another device, isn't it? Hopefully, and as we said with Alison, we're looking forward to getting it direct downloaded onto Victor Reader, which will make a big difference to people who have those, and obviously on Easy Reader eventually as well. So it is going to be very much, you have a wide range of devices to listen to, but if you want to listen to it on your desktop, you can. If you want to listen to it on your whatever, you'll be able to. You know, it'll be incredible. And by the way, the key thing here is it'll be able to get onto other platforms eventually as well. I mean, maybe Dolphin, you know, down the line with the Dolphin Guide software that's available even on the TV system now. So that could be great. Anyway, good conversation. Tell us your thoughts, techtalk@rnib.org.uk. Have you tried out the new RNIB reading services website yet? Do tell us your thoughts and get in touch and share them here. And if you have any questions, don't forget you can ask Tech Talk as well. #AskTechTalk on Twitter. You'll find us at RNIB Radio. Okay, time for this.
Email. We get email. We get your email every day. Here's your mail today.
And Andy's back with us again with emails.
Oh, yes. Thank you so much for all of your emails that you send us. We're going to start off with one from Craig. Craig says, greetings. Just thought I'd drop a quick line to notify any interested parties that Star Trek Picard has AD.
Hallelujah.
As of Friday, February the 7th. Thought I'd mention this after listening to this week's show, which aired February the 11th, so yeah, last week's show at 1 p.m, where it stated that it did not have AD. I thought it best to inform you all that the episodes now did, in case people weren't looking for themselves and relying what was said on air. Whilst it is unfortunate that it has taken Amazon so long to get the AD in place, it is welcome to finally have it. Also, the AD may, I think, have come directly from the original broadcaster, as they are mentioned as having funded it by the describer at the end of the show end credits. Hope this information comes in useful. Best wishes, Craig.
Yes, thank you, Craig. And we should say that our show for last week was actually pre-recorded a little bit earlier than it would usually be recorded, hence why we were a bit late with the news. You're absolutely right, Craig. The announcement that AD was available on that show had actually reached us by the time the show was recorded.
I messaged you on the Friday evening saying,
"That's right,
yeah, Stephen, have a look now."
Yeah, so unfortunately we were a bit behind on that one, but that's just the nature of the beast, I'm afraid, sometimes, isn't it, when you're recording these shows in advance. So, yeah, but I was kind of hoping that it would be done by then. But you just never know, do you? I mean, we could still be sitting here today with no AD on that show. Okay, well, we've had other comments on this, haven't we?
Yeah, also thanks to John for emailing in to let us know that he's enjoying the show with audio description as well.
Excellent, excellent.
So the next email is from Will. It says, "Hi, gang. Hearing listeners complain about audio description has made me think of something. Quite often, in the credits, the person doing the audio describing will say, audio description provided by such and such, and then whichever company is doing the audio description. What if the company providing the audio description, who isn't letting Amazon have the AD track? The only other reason I can come up with is that Amazon just don't care about blind Star Trek fans." That one's from Will.
Well, that's a bit of an indictment, isn't it, Robin? yeah, do Amazon not care?
Well, I think probably that would be more likely, but we know that that's not the case.
I don't think that's true.
It's left-hand, right-hand prioritization thing. I don't think it's just black and white, it just doesn't care. But I would have thought the company that created the audio description track would want it to be in as many localities as possible, because I would suspect that they would get an additional fee for each locality it was used. I don't know.
I don't know about that, but what I'll tell you from my own experience, I had an experience about maybe 4 years ago now. I'd went along to host one of the Audio Description Association conferences, and RNIB hosted that particular event, and I was asked to compare it. And at the time, I was doing my usual, you know, silly jokes and all the nonsense, but, you know, as compares do. But actually, there was a very serious message in there, and I got the chance to speak to the broadcasters at the time and say, look, guys, what's going on? I also got a chance to speak to a number of the companies that produce audio description in the UK, and their response was, we are desperate to get this out there, but it's the distributors that just aren't doing it, and the networks, the TV networks, aren't pushing it. Because the thing about television is, and I think this is the key point here, that it's not just one company or one guy that's running the show. The AD track, the movie, the TV show, whatever it is all produced, and then a distributor, another company, takes on the role of making sure it gets to wherever it needs to go. And unfortunately, it's in that chain, that part of the chain, where something seems to have gone wrong, and it seems to happen fairly regularly. And I don't know why.
It'll be interesting to know in their contract or in their, you know, SLA, service level agreement that they have with the different parties, the other parties that you mentioned there, the fact that they should be passing on their AD tracks in a timely manner.
Is it even in there?
Yeah.
That might be the other link in the chain. Yeah. But we certainly, I would not say Amazon don't care. Having met the people we've met, Robin, from Amazon, they seem very passionate about making content accessible. And they almost felt as annoyed as we were about the lack of AD content. So no, I wouldn't go so far. I know it's easy to say that. I know it's easier to just write off a company on that basis. I wouldn't do that. And that's just experience that tells me that's not the case. But I also understand the frustration when it's not there. You know, I'm not going to get into my rant about Outlander again, which I'm still waiting for season two to get a hold of, so my wife will talk to me again. Okay. Why is that show not got audio description? Please, can someone just sort it out? Come on. Right, what else have we got?
So this next one is from Rod. Hi, Stephen. You may well complain about Amazon, but what about the BBC? BBC iPlayer, where only the last episode is available with AD, and how many years have they been promising to sort it? Joke is that if you use the web version of iPlayer, you can watch anything. That is provided that you have deleted the iPlayer app from your device. I was contemplating buying an Apple TV, but listening to you guys and the hassle with the remote, my system of using an Apple AV connector into the HDMI on my TV is so simple, just ties up my phone whilst we're watching. I have tried the Apple HomePod recently. What a joke, and that sounds CRAP as well. That comes from Rod.
Not a fan.
No.
Right, okay. Well, you know, that's interesting what you're doing there with the AV adapter. I'm assuming, Rod, and you'll tell us, I'm sure, in return of email, that you're just getting sound on that? You're not getting pictures as well?
You can get a Lightning to HDMI or VGA adapter, which
but would that
I would
let
imagine
you transfer
would push
a picture?
All of it through. I don't know. I mean, if you want to have a wireless solution, then get a really ancient Apple TV like we have, which is the pre-fancy remote one, and just use it as an AirPlay device, maybe.
Yeah, well,
pick one up for a song.
That doesn't work either a lot of the time, because interestingly, with ITV, right, I have an endless gripe about ITV, and that they've made the iOS app and the Android app now have audio description, which is great, but on the Apple TV, still no audio description. So my thought was, oh, well, okay, fine. I'll just AirPlay from my phone to my TV, but all it does is send the audio, not the picture. So it must be a licensing thing. I don't know, I'm not even going to speculate as to why it would do that, but you can only get the sound, not the picture. So that
is it because you've got a newer model of Apple TV because it works on ours? So
oh, really?
Yeah. I don't think it's that clever because, you know, when the Universal TV app came in, maybe that made the difference. I don't know.
When you say older one, what version, what generation are you talking?
It hasn't got any apps. Would that be the second or third gen one?
Right, okay. Yeah. Right. I think I've got one of those. In fact, I'm fairly sure there's one lying around the house somewhere. I must check it out. Okay. Right, that's interesting. What was the first point, though? There was a point earlier than that I was wanting to pick up on.
Well, he starts talking about the BBC.
Oh,
BBC
yes,
iPlayer.
BBC. So the iPlayer thing, that's interesting because I've had this issue as well. There's a couple of series I've been keen to watch and I just can't find them with AD on there. So yeah, that does seem to be a problem. And you're right, some of these shows only last for so long, but I didn't know that the web versions or the website version has more AD content on it. So I will check that out. Rod, thank you for that. Very interesting. Okay, what else?
We're going to take the conversation away from AD and we're going to move on to Braille.
Okay.
This email is from Aaron. This is the second part of your email, Aaron, that we didn't get to last week. I've taken to audio description like an eagle and I love it. I'm a very big advocate for Braille too. I believe that Braille is getting a disservice by teachers who don't understand and obviously don't want to teach students. Braille has evolved with technology. It's the teachers of Braille who haven't. They are the problem, not the technology, rather lack of education. Speech listening can only get us so far. I always carry my 14-cell display around with me. I find that Braille input easier on the iPhone and more discreet. I also believe that kids, adults, anybody with low vision needs to learn Braille and O&M skills because you never know what's going to happen, as has been discussed on this very show. Blind and low vision individuals need to be productive members of society. If we aren't pushed to our breaking point and then built back up, then what are we? I'm thankful that I know Braille and I use it for my work in talent acquisition. I'm also glad that I know JAWS inside and out now as well. I hope this email has given some people hope that life goes on after blindness. I know this email has been long, but I'll get you back to the other emails. Thanks for reading this, Andy. All the best. That's from Aaron.
Well, I couldn't have put that any more eloquently myself, I don't think. I mean, you absolutely hit the nail on the head, Aaron. You really do. And I think that point you make about the technology not being the problem, but the Braille teachers is very true. I mean, I don't want to put every single Braille teacher, you know, on the same level here. But there does seem to be a real issue here, Robin, in that people aren't being taught either to a standard or even given the due consideration that perhaps Braille is the right thing to do, even especially with those kids out there who are partially sighted.
Yeah, I mean, I think if it's got a specific VI unit at your school or it's a VI-specific, you know, specialist school, then absolutely. But obviously AbilityNet, we're a pan-disability organisation and there's a whole lot of disabilities out there other than vision. Mm. And it's very, very tough for even Senkos to keep abreast of even the basics across the full panoply. So if it's in a mainstream school where you've got lots of different disabilities in that SEN unit, it's just tough. It's really tough. And budgets are really, really tight as well. So even to get somebody in potentially. So, but they could get fingerprint, couldn't they? They could do that and that would be cheap. And then they could kind of endeavor to learn Braille along with the students. I think that would be
you see,
a really
the
good
thing
solution.
Is, you always bring the perspective that I need on this show sometimes, especially for me, because I'll go off the rails very easily and start ranting about things. But you're absolutely right on this one, because it's about, you know, if you're a child who's in a visual impairment unit in a school, then I would expect that child should at least have the option to learn Braille. Now, in saying that, I actually don't think, my own experience here, just me putting this out there, I don't think you should give kids the option. I think you should teach them it. Because I know from my own experience, I was given the option. And as a kid, what did I want to do? Nothing. I didn't want to do anything. I wanted to do as little as humanly possible. But actually, if I'd been forced to learn Braille, as I actually was forced to touch type, you know, that made a big difference to my life. And I just wish I'd been forced the same with Braille. Because the problem was that my mother had been brought into the school. I remember this. She was brought into the school and she was asked the question, you know, how will Stephen's eyesight go? Is it degenerative or will it continue as it is? And because of the information she had at the time, she told them, well, it'll be fine. It'll just continue as is. So there didn't seem to be a need for Braille. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, here I am, I'm 38 and my sight is a lot worse. And I do need Braille now, and I've had to start learning now, which is unfortunate but good at the same time. So, you know, it's. I would say if you're a blind or partially sighted child and you're in a VI unit, I would expect you to be learning it. I agree, though, with you, specialist educational needs, different story, because you're dealing with so many different disabilities, as you say. But interesting discussion, Aaron. Thank you very much for your comments. Really do appreciate them.
Yep.
Andy.
So this next one's from Alan. Following on from Dean's question about supernova. Hi, yeah. It's Alan McDonald. I heard the show today and I have a supernova screen reader. You can get two major upgrades for £120. If you have bought the version already from Dolphin and I have it on both my desktop and laptop, you can just call Dolphin and ask for an SMA, which stands for Software Maintenance Agreement, and that covers a number of minor upgrades. That's from Alan.
Okay, yep, good advice, Alan. Thank you for that. That was the part of the question I didn't know the answer to last week, so yeah, thank you for clarifying that. Mm-hmm. Okay, thanks, Alan. What else, Andy?
This is from Yngwie. Hello, guys. Thank you for a great tech show. It's always much appreciated. Once again, you are now receiving email from that country which only has two or three inhabitants, at least according to Stephen and Robin.
Norway!
No, I think I have said in the past, because I'm a quarter Norwegian, I know more than three of my own family.
Don't start this quarter there. Norwegian rubbish. Just not to sound like Simon Cowell, who apparently is a quarter Scottish every time he's in Glasgow.
It was Stephen who said he only thought there was four people in Norway.
I said five. I said five people.
It's gone up.
Yeah. I was there at the time, so it's five.
At least to be a few, I will say that we are pretty active. The country we are talking about is Norway, yes, of course. This time I send an email hoping for some help. I am working as a radio journalist and I am, in general, very interested in audio. Regarding this, I have, for a longer time, been looking for a recorder called Olympus LS14. This recorder has a good microphone, it has a built-in voice. However, this product has been discontinued and I'm not able to find it anymore. If any of you listening to this tech show are able to provide me with a new product of Olympus LS14 or tell me where to get it, it would be much appreciated. In advance, thank you so much for your great help and understanding. That's Yngwie.
Yngwie, thank you again. And I love Norway. I would never criticise this country. I was there, was it last year? Year before?
2 years ago.
2 years ago, yeah. I hate that Andy knows more about my travel life than I do.
I wasn't with you.
You weren't there, no. But I will say, what a beautiful place to go. And I'd go back in a heartbeat. I'd live there in a heartbeat. Honestly, I love it. But here's the thing. You're absolutely right about this LS14. Interestingly, I get the very same information recently because I was looking for one as well. I love my dictaphones and I get fed up using phones for everything. And I couldn't find this. I checked eBay, I looked up Amazon thinking it might be available. It's clearly an older phone, or older dictaphone. And it's gone. But there is a new one. The R&IB sell it here in the UK. And is it the DM770?
It is. Yes, the DM770 voice recorder with voice guidance.
Let me say that again, DM770. Now, that's an upgrade on, there was a DM5, don't know if you remember these ones, Robin, but there's the DM5 and the DM7.
That sounds like quite an upgrade.
Yeah. Well, remember, these things aren't upgraded very often, let's be fair. But yeah, it was DM5, DM7. Because I had the DM7, and you remember, Andy, I had the problem. I had to get a battery for it, and
yes,
it was all that hassle of getting. I couldn't find a good. That was a smashing little machine.
And I haven't
though.
Seen it since.
No, well, the battery didn't work.
No,
so it ended up in the drawer of the drawer of death.
Yeah.
But yeah, the DM770 is the newer one. So tell us what it says about it on the RNIB website, Andy.
The Olympus DM770 recorder uses an integral 3-microphone system to provide stereo recordings.
All right, hang on, you're on QVC.
Well, this is my gig for QVC. It has an advanced voice guidance and distinctive button contours to help support our customers.
The button contours.
The voice guidance allows simple navigation through the menu, while the integrated USB allows easy connection to a PC without the use of cables.
Nice.
It has 8 gig of memory. Allowing over 2,000 hours of recording.
That's usually how long it takes us to do one take of the show.
Yeah. It also comes with a case and a strap. If anyone would like to find out more, now I don't know if the RNIB shop sends stuff to Norway. I'm guessing they do.
I'm sure they can.
If you would jump over to shop.rnib.org.uk and type in the product code VR19, that'll take you straight to the device. It'll give you all the information, the description, the delivery, the returns, everything on that page.
Well, I hope that helps, Yngwie, but you may be able to get it at a better price in your country rather than trying to get it from the UK. But DM770, that's what you're looking for. Hope that helps.
Do you want the price as well?
Oh, what is the price?
It's in pounds sterling, £199.99.
It's a bit pricey, isn't it?
Well, you pay for that, the goodness of it all, don't you?
Yeah, you pay the premium, by the sounds of it.
Premium, yeah.
Right, okay.
Might have to look on QVC after all.
Yeah, going to get easy pay on that. Right, not that I've been to QVC, don't know what they're talking about.
No.
Right, what else have we got?
Right, so this is following on from your review about the Blind Shell Classic, Stephen, from last week.
Actually, do you know what? I'll pause you there.
Oh.
Because I know there's a couple of emails attached to this one. We'll come back to those emails in a minute.
Okay.
I think it's time, Robin, we talked about drones, don't you?
Yeah.
Let's hear from David Woodbridge, who's been testing out a drone that he wants to share with us.
Hi, and welcome to this demo series on using the Tello EDU drone, and that's Tello, T-E-L-L-O, Tello EDU drone, with Swift Playgrounds and VoiceOver, so that you can fly the aircraft yourself. The actual apps to control the Tello EDU drone are inaccessible. However, using Swift Playgrounds and the Tello Space Travel template, you can certainly fly the drone without any issues. So what you basically need is an iPad running Swift Playgrounds. You download the third-party Tello EDU space travel template, and then off you go. And just a description of the drone itself. This one's specifically set up for flying indoor and outdoor. The Tello EDU drone is a quadcopter, so you've got 4 propellers coming out of each corner at an angle. Each of the propeller blades has a little plastic guard around them just to protect your fingers a little bit from the blades. And the blades are plastic. Now, if I'm holding it so the long body of the drone is facing away from me, the front of the drone, where I've got it currently in its orientation, is a camera at the front. And at the back of it, I can put my fingers on a notch on the top and the bottom, and that's actually the battery. So if I grab it and pull it, I've just taken the battery out of the drone. Okay, so popping the battery back in again. And now it's back in. So that's the long axis of the drone. So distance-wise, if you want a comparison, the actual drone body is about the length of my middle finger. So that's how long it is. And it's probably about 2 finger widths wide. Okay, so it's a pretty small drone. But remember that you've still got the arms, as I said, coming out from each corner at an angle, and they're supporting the actual propellers. Total flying time for the drone is around about 13 minutes. Let me turn the drone on, push the on button in, one Mississippi, and then release it so that's on. And yes, you can't tell whether the drone's on or off just by turning it on. There's no beep, vibration, or anything else. So if I come to my iPad,
Playgrounds active.
Double tap on Playgrounds.
Playgrounds close button. Previous page button. Take off and landing button. Heading.
Okay, so the
opens the table of contents.
So one of the first sections in there is on how to fly your drone, and effectively I'm going to be using this as a bit of a template, so to speak, to do these series of drone flights for you. So the first one, which is what I'm covering today, is how to take off and land. So if I just read this, flicking to the right.
Instructions. Goal. Use Swift commands to tell Dello to take off and land. Like every aircraft, you need to first take off. You write Swift commands to tell Dello to take off and land. 1. Place your Dello on a flat surface. 2. Make sure the battery level is above 20%. 3. Enter the first commands. Take off left paren, right paren. Full stop. 4. Enter. Wait left paren seconds, colon 3, right paren. 2. Hold your Dello in the air for 3 seconds. 5. Enter the final commands. Land left paren, right paren. Full stop. 6. Tap on my code. Code. Take off left paren, right paren. Text field.
Okay, so I'm going to go into it.
Left paren, right paren.
Now,
text field.
It's already pre-populated this already with the commands. And now we're ready for the aircraft to take off, hover for 3 seconds, and land again. We just make sure it's in a clear spot. And let's run the code. And I don't have to find the run button. I can just do Command key plus R. And there we go. It took off, hovered for 3 seconds, and then landed. And it probably came down about 5 centimeters forward of where it took off. It does do a fairly good job of staying in the same spot, particularly as all it was literally doing was going up in the air, hovering, and coming down again. When it takes off from the surface it's actually sitting on, it's probably going up about 100 centimeters. As you can tell, it's pretty loud. So before we finish, let me just do one more flight up and down. And there we go. I'll stop playing now, and that completes the demo of flying the Tello EDU drone via Swift Playgrounds using VoiceOver.
Well, there we go. I didn't think we'd be talking about drones on the show, Robin.
Well, we usually drone on, so, you know.
That's true. Yeah, yeah, that makes sense, yeah. Okay, so that's that then. Are you going to buy one?
I'm tempted. I don't know how much it is. I know that there are lots of other drones that are programmable as well. And so that's Swift Playgrounds. It's been on the iPad for a long time. People who are thinking, well, I haven't got an iPad, actually, if you have a Mac, then last week's update to Catalina brought Swift Playgrounds to the Mac as well as a Catalyst app.
Nice.
So you can actually do that programming on your Mac as well. So I don't know, I'm tempted. I've always thought they're never going to be for us because they'll just fly off into the sunset and, you know, we won't know what to do, or we'll decapitate the cat or something. So, but this makes it all very straightforward, and you know it's going to come back to exactly, as long as you get the maths right, you know it's going to come back to where it started.
And we should say that no cats have been destroyed as a result of this.
Yet.
Well, it was so loud, we don't know. There might have been a terrible cat decapitation. No, sorry.
No, it didn't happen, Robin.
Okay.
It didn't happen. It was all fine.
No, putting that in the show notes.
Yeah, exactly. We'll get emails on that one. Speaking of which, let's get back to them.
Email. We get email. We get your email every day.
None about cats, though.
Here's your mail today.
Right, tons coming in from the RSPCA.
Yeah, I know. Right, let's get back to the emails then, Andy. What
straight
you
into an email from Stuart. As I said, yes, this is following on from the Blind Shell Classic mobile phone review from last week.
Yeah.
This phone, says Stuart, should have voice control and dictation, as I have used it both in the past. If the phone is connected to Wi-Fi, a mobile network, or both, then you can activate voice control by holding down any of the 2 volume buttons until you hear the voice saying, "I listen" after the beep. Perform a long press of the volume buttons to activate voice control when you are not in an edit field, and you can say things like, "Call mum." In terms of dictation, you can Again, long press the volume buttons when actually in an edit field, and this will allow dictation of text messages, for example. I recently worked with a client who was having problems accessing this feature, and I had to reconnect her Wi-Fi and mobile network to fix the problem. Not sure if this helps, but as far as I'm aware, the Blindshell Classic should definitely have the voice control and dictation feature in it. All the best. Keep up the good work. That's from Stuart.
Well, I can tell you, Stuart, you're absolutely right. Because after you sent me that email, I went off and tested it. And yes, it does. Either volume button, which is actually a really useful place to put them, because the volume buttons themselves don't seem to hold much use other than to obviously change the volume instead of having a button at the side. Well, the thing is that they're not labelled as volume buttons, and they're actually above the call and the hang-up buttons. So you wouldn't really know what they're for. Mm-hmm. They would have been, I guess, menu buttons back on the older phones. But yeah, or maybe a back button, that kind of thing. It was that kind of position, you know, so it didn't make even sense to me there were volume buttons. But yes, when you hold it down, if you're not in an edit field, it will come up and it'll just say listening, and then you can say call Andy or call Robin or call Mum. But you have to put the contact in as that first or it won't work. So that's the first thing. But yeah, it is good. We did do a bit of dictation back and forward. I sent you a couple of text messages and it worked.
Unbroadcastable, but yes, you did send some messages to me.
They were all unbroadcastable, yes. Yeah.
They must have been dictation errors, obviously.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. Moving on.
I think this is brilliant because this is the missing piece for me.
Yeah.
This clinches it. I think this is the blind phone, guys. Well,
I'm liking it. I'm really liking it, I've got to say. I think if it... It's one of those things, isn't it? Once, if you get one of these, you think, oh, this is amazing. I love it. It's so easy to use. And it is. I mean, making phone calls is so swift and so easy and the call quality is good and all of that. But of course, it doesn't have my banking app and it doesn't have GPS yet. So, you know, it's not quite there for me to do a switch. I'd still have to carry something else. But
it's
I do like it. It's not for me, I don't think. But it would be the kind of phone I would take with me on a night out or if I was going on holiday. I'd switch my SIM into this so that if I lose it, you know, whatever, you know. But I'm not going to lose my iPhone 11 Pro on a beach somewhere, but I would, you know, I'm not too fussed about losing this one, he says. Okay, but we have more on this, I believe.
Yeah, that's a big thanks to Alan McDonald as well, who also emailed to let us know about this feature.
Oh, thanks, Alan.
So this next one continues. This is from Barry, also on the Blind Shell, and what he calls its shortcomings. A very interesting demonstration of the Blind Shell, which does sound to be a very comprehensive machine. I had been managing with my old Nokia N95 with Torx for about 15 years.
Wow,
but after becoming...
that's incredible.
Yes. Round of applause.
We'll send you a medal.
Yeah.
But after becoming a regular to Tech Talk, I began to think about getting a smartphone.
Yeah, well done.
I had a very good demonstration of the Synaptic phone and rang up with the intention to order one, as it seemed ideal, as the screen was a doddle to navigate, if you kept your spare fingers out of the way, that is. The reason for thinking about a smartphone was to be able to add third-party apps such as Blind Square, but was told that this was not possible. If I was going to pay in excess of £500, I felt I needed a little more out of the phone. When I heard about Blindshell, I rang Cobalt Systems and was told that this was also the case with that phone, like all the other special phones. It's good to be able to ask, where am I? But what I would like is to be able to plan a route, etc., without buying a standalone device.
I'm absolutely in agreement with you on that one, Barry.
I eventually decided to buy an iPhone SE last year, but my tale of woe would probably just take up another whole program. It does not seem to like the way that I tap the screen. Or maybe it's just my fingers it doesn't like, as it has spent more time disabled than actually working. We will persist and hopefully become at least moderately proficient before I run out of sighted helpers. Carry on tech talking. All the best from Barry Hayward.
Well, Barry, do get in touch with us and tell us the problems you're having because we can maybe try and talk you through that. I don't think you're alone in that one at all.
No, and I would encourage you to go into the motor section of accessibility because there's a lot you can change in there for the how much quickly you have to double tap things. The general response, there's a whole section called Assisted Touch, which is a set of menus that can help bring up a little thing on the screen instead of having to do complicated gestures that you really don't get on with. And obviously in iOS 13, now all of the gestures that you might have trouble with, like the rotor, two fingers swiveling around, you can reassign those to something else. So yeah, please don't give up with your mission to get to grips with it.
No, I definitely not. That is, it's a great phone, and that's the thing. We've been saying this for so long. It is really accessible, but you have to be able to use it, don't you? That's the key if you're having those challenges already. But do, no, like I say, do get in touch with us. I'd love to hear. Don't worry about the length of the email. Andy can read it.
I can.
He's so, you know, it's important that you tell us what's going on, because we can try and help each other on that one. Okay, let's try and get another one or two in before the end of the show.
Right, this is following on from one of our previous shows about burglar alarms.
Oh, yeah.
This comes in from Matthew. Hi, Tech Talk team. Around 7 or 8 years ago, a local security specialist installed a burglar alarm from Visonic in my house. Unfortunately, I can't be any more specific than this. I have lost the instructions, and the installer seems to have gone out of business. But it has a talking keypad.
Mm.
It's not fully accessible, as the menus don't speak, but it does announce when the alarm is armed and disarmed, and obviously then in what zone, i.e. the whole house or just the downstairs area. And if alarm is triggered, it will speak the name of the room containing the offending sensor. It will also speak rudimentary error message, i.e. Not being able to arm the system because the door is open. The sensors communicate wirelessly on, I believe, 433 MHz, but this is completely separate from the house Wi-Fi and does not need an internet connection to work. Perhaps your listener could contact Visonic, that's V-I-S-O-N-I-C, and see if they can identify the specific alarm that I have from this description. I don't know if it is available as a self-install option. It cost me around about £500 to have it professionally installed, but there weren't any ongoing fees after that, except the cost of new batteries every couple of years, which I can purchase and replace myself. I really like the system, although I will replace it with a HomeKit-compatible system when such a thing is released. Thank you for your email, Matthew.
Well, yeah, check it out and see. But I know we've got just one more little comment there about doorbells.
This is from listener Nick, yes, regarding smart doorbells. I have found that with my doorbell button with a camera, callers do not ring the bell, they bang my door.
Mm, I get that.
This is my guide dog, who is the only one who will let me know that there's someone at my door. Worryingly, my front door is glass. Yes, kind regards. May need a glass fitter soon.
Yes.
That well, is really interesting,
yeah,
that they can recognise what that is and avoid using it. Really,
that's crazy. Come on. I mean, really? Yeah, I've had that as well. People banging the door and then eventually pressing the button, not realising what it is at all. I mean, it's a doorbell, for goodness sake. It says ring on it. Anyway, there you go. That's it for our show this week. Andy, thank you for that. I know there's tons more emails coming
in. Tons more, but yes, I'll chat to you next week.
Yeah, we've got time for more of those on next week's show. You can continue to email us, techtalk@rnib.org.uk. Don't forget, you can get in touch on Twitter as well, @RNIBRadio, and ask Tech Talk as well. Just use the hashtag AskTechTalk. Give us your questions. We'll get them over to the Technology for Life team. Robin, thank you once again.
Thanks a lot. Quick plug for the Dot to Dot podcast. We're up to episode 1115.
Oh, congratulations. Catch you next week.